This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Welcome to the Range Podcast. I'm Ricky Brule, and with me is Jake Hollywood Iverson. Join us at the archery range, where we'll tell stories from the hunt, discuss technical bow shooting tactics and gear, and pick the brains of some of the most successful people to ever shoot a bow. Whether you're about to shoot that X for the win or send an arrow at a trophy buck, this podcast is for you. Range Podcast is brought to you by Vapor Trail Archery, makers of the best bowstrings money can buy, originators of limb-driven arrow rest technology, and innovators of stokerized stabilizer systems.
Welcome to the Range, everybody. I'm your host, Ricky Brule, and I'm here with my trusty co-host, Mr. Hollywood. How you doing, buddy?
Doing all right. Hanging in there. Yeah. Just kicking until busy season gets here.
Until busy season.
We're counting the days. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Here we go.
Yep.
Here we go. Just the anxiety starts to kick in.
It's already fluttering.
Are we ready? We're never ready, are we?
No, no, never. I don't think you can be. I just did one last stock assignment for our new stock bows that we're going to be carrying. And oh my God, let's hope we've got everything, I guess.
Yeah, I hear that.
Hold on tight.
Orders are starting to ramp up on the website and everything. Mm-hmm. So that's usually a pretty good indication. And then after the 4th of July, the tsunami hits.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure our guest today knows a little something about that too. So
I imagine that he does. Yeah. Well, thank you all for joining us today. You can find the video version of this episode on the Vapor Trail YouTube channel. So please head on over, subscribe, give us a like, and be sure to hit that bell so you can be up to date on all things archery. Also, don't forget to follow us at the Range Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, as well as the Vapor Trail Archery and Stokerized Stabilizer channels. On the show today is a gentleman who occupies his days keeping things sharp for all of us bow hunters. Matt Bateman is the face of Grim Reaper Broadheads and is one of the most successful and hardworking bow hunters that I know. He spends a lot of his time chasing critters in the mountains of Utah, and more recently, he's been slaying what we like to call Minnesota gold up here in the Midwest, also known as the walleye. Good morning, Matt. How's it going, buddy?
Morning, guys. Good to be on. I'm doing good. Just like you guys said, just gearing up for the tsunami coming here in a month. So trying to mix in a little fishing and prepping for bow season. We get going early out west here. So
yeah,
it's a busy time of the year. A lot going on, and going into this is what my 19th year at Grim Reaper, so I'm definitely no stranger to the program, but every year it kind of catches you off guard and sneaks up on you so.
Every time. Yeah, especially when you have some consistent growth year after year, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's And it's changed a little bit over the last 5-6 years, you know, post COVID, whatever.
Yeah,
But it always really ramps up about now. So.
Yeah, we're feeling that. We call it the COVID hangover.
Yeah. And I feel that, you know, almost to a T. I do the exact same thing as you, Matt. I'm just, you know, enjoying the outside time that we get right now, where in about, you know, 6 weeks I'll be locked in this building about 10 to 12 hours a day just trying to get everything out the door and rolling before it's just, you know, craziness the whole time. And you know, it's either fishing or golf, I guess, you know, anything to get outside and enjoy time outside of work while we've got it yet.
Absolutely,
it's crazy all the time.
Yeah,
and then you already kind of mentioned it. So your role with Grim Reaper, what are you doing that's, you know, making you go crazy during the July through August stuff? Can you expand a little bit there?
Yeah, just give you a little deeper introduction to me. I've been here at Grim Reaper Broadheads 19 years. I'm the longest tenured employee here. Kind of the right-hand man to the original owner, inventor, Jay Lichty. You know, technically my job title here is National Sales Manager, but as you guys know, similar type company over there at Vapor Trail, you know, that means wearing a lot of hats.
Yep.
So, and it seems to be more and more these days.
Yeah.
You know, I manage sales nationally and internationally, oversee our rep group, et cetera, but I also oversee a lot of the day-to-day operations and productions and heavily involved with about everything Grim Reaper, from marketing to quality to, you know, a new product. So yeah, just anything going on at Grim Reaper, I have my hands in, absolutely. It's just a busy time of the year, ramping up production, getting ready for, you know, we've been busy, but, you know, like you guys said, after the 4th of July, people really start realizing, hey, it's bow hunting season's here in a month. I need to start grabbing broadheads and arrows. So we get crazy busy kind of July through October is our go time. Start tailing off November, December-ish a little bit. But just making as many broadheads as we can. You know, a little backstory on Grim Reaper. We make everything in-house. We're one of the only independent broadhead brands left in this entire industry that's 100% under original ownership, 100% made in the USA, and manufactured right here in our own facility in Utah. So along with that comes a lot of hands-on projects. You know, I'm up in my office right now, but I spend a lot of my time down on the machine shop floor. We have 26 CNC machines and we're pumping out parts and components and assembling broadheads and packaging and shipping all from our facility here. So it's a lot going on, but gives me very hands-on ability to make sure we're kicking out the products that our customers expect and keeping the quality where it needs to be and giving real answers to our dealers as far as availability of product, et cetera. It's just all, you know, it's totally different than a lot of other brands out there. We're 100% in-house, which is really cool, but it adds a lot of to-dos to my to-do list for sure. So.
It must be something with these black and red and white companies. Everything he just said is like exactly us. It's you know, we try and divide ourselves as much as we can here, but man, like Rick and I, we share many hats as well. Where, just like you said, you know, we're large but small, and you know, we our to do lists. I mean, we have our own little organizer for us to keep track of everything, and man, it just grows and grows and grows. And I swear to God, it's just like working from behind every busy season, trying to keep up.
Yeah,
it's just crazy.
I'm in total reactive mode. I just,
yep.
You know, I don't get too much on my want to do list. I just end up putting out fires and reacting.
Yep.
To things that come my way every day. So
yeah.
I had to let the whole company know, put a note on my door, shut the door, and say, "Hey, leave me alone for an hour."
I'm out.
So. It's hard to get a
an hour of breathing time around here for me.
It is. So. Well, yeah, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today. And and I feel that too, because right now I think, well, Hollywood and I, you know, aside from Murph, are the longest tenured employees here. And so it's hard to, it's really difficult to bring somebody in and teach them everything that we know. You know what I mean? Like just there's so much knowledge that we've.
Yeah, there's that level of tribal knowledge that just you can't really pass on when it's a 20-year type tribal knowledge, and only myself and the owner, Jay, there's certain things that only the two of us, we're the only two guys on the world that know and understand or can do or can figure out, and so it's you know, comes with the territory, but it's cool.
Yeah, for sure.
I
just wanted to, and I just want to make mention too, that, you know, I've shot Grim Reaper broadheads for quite some time, and I've messed around with other ones, you know, but I always end up coming back. And I wanted to point out, so it was quite, it was over a decade ago. I was shooting a Bowtech 82nd Airborne, and I was really into fixed blade broadheads. I was shooting a Magnus at the time, and I was really having a hard time getting my arrows to fly out of that bow really well. And I remember talking to you at the ATA show for a little bit, and you were like, oh, you got to get these will fly great. They'll fly as true as your field points and everything. And I was like, all right, you know, cool. So I, you know, I gave them a try. And then that fall I ended up shooting, I guess not my biggest mule deer, but my, at that time it was the biggest one I had shot. And I was with Ben Gatormson on that hunt, and I shot that mule deer at 92 yards. With a Grim Reaper broadhead. And I just remember then, like, that following ATA show, I was showing you pictures, and it was just, I don't know, it was really cool. And so I've never really looked back, you know. Like I said, I've played around with other broadheads and stuff, but when it comes to especially long range stuff, just a deadly broadhead, and just always loved it, you know, at any distance, doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah,
they always do the job.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the mechanical fixed blade conversation will never end.
Right.
It's just not ever going to go away. And that's fine. I've had the conversation thousands and thousands of times. I couldn't even count how many times. And we make both, you know, we make awesome fixed blades and awesome mechanicals and hybrids. We have one of the most diverse lineups of broadheads on the planet, if not the most diverse lineup. But yeah, absolutely. When it comes to just pinpoint accuracy and forgiveness, and that's been one of my pitches always, is a good quality mechanical is just the most accurate, most forgiving option out there. It's not for everyone, and it's, you know, we can dive down those rabbit holes, but when it comes to just putting something on and the ability to go have be accurate, forgiving out of the gate with the properly, you know, tuned setup, is unmatched for sure.
It's so funny. I know years ago, I think when I first started, of course, you know, the mechanical thing at certain companies have, you know, a broader reach for some marketing, but I was running, you know, Rage at the time, and I remember Ears and Rick both just relentless on me for years, man. And I don't know what made me change. I mean, there's many reasons what made me change, but eventually, I think it was the last year that Ears was here, I think that was when I finally switched. And what got me was the hybrids for sure. I was like, this is awesome. It's best of both worlds. And then, yeah, now I'm kind of stuck with it. And well, literally, and we'll get to that.
You're not the first.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I cut myself pretty much every day.
Yeah, I'm sure, man. I'm sure. They are not dull by any sense of the word.
No, they're not.
Well, hey, Matt, I'm curious about your origin story when it comes to bow hunting. Tell us a little bit about what got you into it and what really sparked that fire for you.
Yeah, so, you know, I've from day one, just as a kid, I was obsessed with the outdoors, hunting, fishing, anything, trapping, whatever. I grew up on a big dairy farm, had my own 100 acres to roam with the river running through it. And I just, you know, I grew up getting my butt kicked as far as working hard on a dairy farm, but just kind of fell in love with the outdoors and just had, I was just blessed to have a place to roam and shoot guns and bows and set traps and do those kind of things. And so I just was always just part of my life and love the outdoors. My dad, big into fishing and hunting, but he was never much of a bow hunter. So I bow hunted. I wanted to bow hunt, but just wasn't, you know, something that at that time I really was successful at, just as a teenager. When I was 15, I got my first taste. I killed a little muley with my bow, and that really started a fire in me. But for years I bounced around hunting with different weapons, guns, muzzle loaders, archery, shotguns, and a lot of bird hunting back in the day. And just slowly started gravitating towards archery, just being, you know, more enjoyable for me. I love the seasons we had here in Utah, better seasons, better weather, more opportunity. So I just gravitated towards, archery a little bit. And, when I got a little older, got out of college, I got kind of headhunted, took a job at a custom gun manufacturing company. And I was there about a year, and it was cool to be in the hunting industry, but man, my heart was with archery. And I ended up on a hunt, in Sonora, Mexico, in my early 20s. And I've been successful. I've killed a lot of animals with my bow and different weapons, but I ended up on a hunt in Sonora. And I took my bow, I showed up on this hunt. This is over 20 years ago, and got there, and I was the only guy in camp, back in stick and string. Everyone had fancy high-powered rifles, and the Hispanic guides there, honestly, most of them had never seen a bow and arrow.
Oh, wow.
Like, they were just blown away by, I'd shoot, and they would all gather around and watch. And we went out in one of the high rack trucks you see in Mexico, mm-hmm. right, where you ride around. Yeah. This fox ran out and stopped at like 60 yards. And I was trying to communicate with one of the guys. I said, "Can I shoot that?" And he kind of got this big eyes. He's like, yeah, shoot. So I drew back and 60, and here's this fox out there. And I smoked this fox. And this, you would have thought I shot a 250-inch deer. These guys are... They started freaking out and hooting and hollering. And anyway, it was, long story short, it was after that, they wanted me to shoot at everything we saw. If we saw a rabbit or animal, you know, pretty soon I'm like, look, guys, I'm running out of arrows. But the other side of it is they wouldn't let me go off on my own, and they wanted to follow me. And I tried for 9 days with my bow.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't happening, you know, and no excuses. But last day of the hunt, I borrowed a rifle, ended up killing this a great big muley, and which was awesome. But I came home, kind of kicked myself, like, man, I really wanted to get it done with my bow. I felt like I kind of threw in the towel, picked up a gun, mm-hmm. and I just made a resolution, and that was like January, New Year's resolution stuff. I just made a resolution. I wanted to be a bow hunter. I wanted to be in the bow archery industry, and I haven't picked up and I'm not anti-gun hunting, but I haven't hunted with a gun since, mm-hmm. and that's been over 20 years ago. Oh. And I just completely dedicated myself to archery, anything archery, practicing, learning equipment, learning gear, which led to, you know, a buddy of mine. I started killing a bunch of critters, and pretty soon a buddy of mine, hey, you got to shoot Grim Reaper. My buddy owns the company, and Grim Reaper was in its infancy, and so I started shooting them, killing critters. I stopped by one day to the shop, Grim Reaper shop back then, little hole in the wall in a place they were trying mm-hmm. to get off the ground, and stopped by to get some broadheads, and Jay, the owner, just kind of said, hey, you know, how do you like your job? And I said, well, it's hunting industry, it's cool, but I don't like guns, I could care less, mm-hmm. and I'm a bow hunter. And he said, well, we're trying to grow and figure things out. Would you be interested in talking to us? And so went and met with Jay and his wife and sat down. And, you know, like I said, Grim Reaper was just in the infancy. Nobody, they were grinding, trying to get it going. And I jumped in, and here we are 20 years later, you know. I just, my whole life has become archery and bow hunting, and been blessed to hunt all over the world and be really successful doing it, and meet a ton of incredible people and build partnerships and build a career out of it. So that's how it all started. Just finally, you know, one moment just triggered me that this is what I want to do, and I'm going to fully commit, full send. Nothing's going to get in my way. I didn't know a single person in the archery industry really. And, you know, all just working my butt off and having success, all of a sudden started opening doors, and here I am. So that's kind of the backstory that really drove archery for me.
Yeah, I love that story. And you perfectly went right into the next question that I was going to ask, because I wanted to talk about the post you had put earlier this year about that resolution you made in 20 years ago. And you and I have some things in common in that area, other than the fact that you've probably killed 300 more animals than I have. But in that post too, it's amazing because you've got, I mean, and that's probably not everything, all of the success that you've had, but that's 72 hero shots, right? In one photo right there. So that's just incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been super blessed, you know, but I take a lot of pride in that, and guys, you know, I get guys, young guys, or just people say, man, you're so lucky. You're sponsored by this company, or you get this equipment or whatever. And I can honestly just look at it and say, look, I worked my butt off. Mm-hmm. I paid for this tenfold before anyone ever gave me a bow or anything.
Right.
It was just good old fashioned blood, sweat, tears. For years, I just bought everything. And even the first year that I started shooting on a kind of a local Hoyt staff, you know, I paid for my bow at a discount, and I never expected anything, never asked for anything. And somewhere along the lines, one year I got my bow and they didn't charge my card. And I said, look, guys, hey, is my card expired? And they're like, no, man, you've earned it. And I take pride in that I never had a thing handed to me that I truly, and that's the dairy farmer in me. I don't ever want to feel like I've got anything that I don't deserve. And I worked hard to create that collage of critters. And yeah, there's a lot more that aren't on that. That's all I can figure out how to put on one sheet.
Yeah.
But, you know, 90% of that's public land, DIY, archery. You know, last few years I've been blessed to go on a few bucket list hunts in foreign countries where I'm with a guide or whatever, because it's required, you know, but most of it's just blood, sweat, tears, blue collar, couldn't afford most of it, you know, scraping by, you know, just trying to figure out how to get there. Like my first big trip, when I came to Grim Reaper, I built a couple really nice custom rifles. When I worked in the hunting industry, the first thing I did was sell those guns.
There you go.
And took the $9,000 I made off of them and went to Africa.
Yeah.
You know, just with my bow. Like I just was always obsessed with that and paid my own way. And yeah, there's obviously some cool perks being in the industry and some doors that have been open with my success. But man, it's been a grind, and I still work my tail off every day to be, you know, you don't go find success on good quality animals on public land without working your tail off. And that's every time that someone asks, what's the secret? There's no secret. It's just hard work.
Yep.
I mean, you just grind and work your butt off, and no one sees the tough times behind the scenes. They see those glory shots, but you can't even tally the amount of blood, sweat, tears put into that. So.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly where you hunt, and that's, and we won't obviously discuss that, but I've been in some areas that I suspect are similar, and you know, all of those areas that you spend a lot of your time in, that's a grind, you know, and then you gotta, when you have success, you gotta get the animal out. Right. And it's like, and I know you do like a lot of whitetail stuff and all that kind of stuff, but yeah, a lot of that mountain hunting, it's tough. It's a lot. It's a grind. Yeah. And
you can put yourself in some bad spots real fast.
Yep, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I know you do a lot of, I think, is it Kip's kind of your right hand man out there in the when you're out there hunting. You guys do a lot of hunting together, right? Kip Fowler.
Yeah, Kip Fowler was a good buddy of mine, one of my best friends, and him and I, when it comes to most of our hardcore backcountry type stuff, he and I are pretty tight at the hip. And we've been hunting together. Gall, right about the time I started here at Grim Reaper, he sent me a picture of a giant yearly he'd killed, and we got changing stories and started hunting together in, I think it was 2008. And we just haven't looked back. But having a guy that you can count on and trust, I mean, we've been on hunts where literally you're putting your life in your partner's hands, some drop-in hunts in Alaska or whatever. We've been through some wild adventures together. But you got to have someone with the same mentality, mindset, same ability physically to, like you said, you climb into some of these places and shoot something, you got to deal with it, and there's just no way around it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the clock's ticking,
yeah,
whether you're racing against weather or elements, to animals, to try and properly take care of what you killed. So it's not for the faint hearted. And sometimes there's been times I didn't think I could do it, but you just keep grinding and motivating each other. And so it's cool to have that partnership. And it's, you know, and it's all, so much of it's here mentally, yep. You know, we talk about physicality, but, bow hunting and that kind of bow hunting is such a mental grind at times. And it's amazing what you can do physically, or people can do, humans can do physically with the right mental toughness.
Yeah.
I'm a huge advocate for that, and that's where I've gained it, is in the backcountry. That's where I've got my mental toughness from mostly. So
yeah
there's something to be said about, well, the mental toughness, and then the secret sauce. It's funny, you know, I always wonder too, like, what's the, you know, how is Matt successful? And it always comes back down to the things that are underneath your midsection, and it's your two legs. Walk and research, yeah. You know, it's, and
yeah,
you know, a lot of people are looking for just the outside edges. And when I first started dabbling in the Western stuff, it's like, I've heard you say it, and I've heard other, you know, thing people have said it, where it's like, I let my eyes do the walking. Okay. Like, okay, that's why you don't see anything then. So yeah. It's like, no, just go walk a few miles back and you might start getting into something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you get out of what you put in, for sure.
Yeah.
And, if you were to take and just look around and pick out half a dozen, like, just super successful Western hunters that year in and year out, just get it done, and see behind the scenes, I guarantee you all of those guys are just absolutely the real deal, working their butts off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people put on a show. A lot of people want to be seen or want to portray themselves as something. And I don't, you know, I'm not saying I'm anything at all, but if you go find 6 or 8 or 10 of those just guys that are just absolute killers year in and year out, consistently getting the job done, man, if you could see what they do on a year to year behind the scenes, they're grinding every day doing something to make themselves successful.
Yeah.
That's the secret sauce. That's what guys don't see.
Yeah.
They want to know, hey, oh man, you must have a honey hole, or you must have a secret. Yeah. I do have honey holes.
Yeah.
Because I've pounded the mountains for 20 years, yep, in this area to find that honey hole and figure out where the deer are moving and going and where they're going to be and where they're going to go. And so, you know, and I've hunted all over the West and all over the country, actually. And they're, you know, I take and all different species, and I take little bits from every hunt I go on to try and make me a better hunter on the next hunt.
Yep. So, that's exactly what I was just going to say. It's just built up knowledge over the years. And when you go back, of course, yeah, then you'll find those spots. And then, yeah.
Yeah. And everyone says, oh man, if I knew then what I know now.
Yeah.
And I can say that because I've missed more big deer as a teenager and in my early 20s, probably, than most guys will ever see in their life.
Yeah.
Yep.
But all that time of grinding and failing is what made me who I am today. So, you know, I wouldn't want to go back and know what I know back then because it's all just taught me so much. And you know, and I still learn. I still try and learn every day something. I try and do something daily. That's kind of my routine or my goal. I try and do something every day that makes me a better bow hunter, whether that's shoot my bow or training physically or mentally or researching whatever. But it's a lifestyle. It's a grind. Yeah. There's no secret.
No.
Guys that are out there killing it all the time are putting in the work.
Yeah.
And everyone can get lucky a time or two. People can put on a good show, but start watching the trend. Guys that are just doing it all the time, every year. There's no easy path.
So, Not at all. And it's funny too, thinking, you know, back where you guys started, you know, that 20 years ago, whatever it might be, the technology you had at the time compared to like what I have now, even when I started 10 something years ago, whatever it was, it's like, man, like you guys didn't have a whole lot. And then it's funny, you know, like you were saying just a little bit ago with, you know, just starting with Grim Reaper and it was still small. And now you look at it, it's like, oh my God, it's a huge company. Same kind of goes for us too.
Respected broadhead brands in the world.
Yeah.
But we're still a small family owned brand, but yeah, it's cool to see where we've come. So
yeah. And it's still, it's awesome product too. And that's what I was going to say, you know, just earlier, that's a mark that will stay with me forever. It's just, if anyone needs a sharp broadhead, Grim Reaper's it. It's a thumbs up for the thumb that took, you know, almost half of it off. It was the Micro Hades. I was trying to fix blades and tried getting that thing put on an arrow and ended up about $500 later at a emergency room. It's like classic, you know, hunt all alone and try and put this thing on and half my thumb's hanging off. I'm like, oh no. So a little bit of lost feeling in the tip of my thumb now, but it's just like, you know, if you need a sharp broadhead, go ahead. I get a reminder every year, September, I think like 14th, every single year I get the picture that pops up of me in the emergency room just gushing, man. It's insane.
Yeah, they're definitely sharp. And I play with them every day, and I know the ins and outs of Grim Reaper broadheads than anyone in the world, better than anyone in the world.
Yep.
And I still cut myself about every other day.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking that too, when you were saying, you know, when we have the knowledge that we do, you know, being in our respective niche parts of our industry, you know, us strings and rest, you, broadheads, you know what might be up with one thing where I don't, you know, I know broadheads, but I don't know them like you do, where I know when a guy cuts his string with a Grim Reaper broadhead, I know that string wasn't broken like that. That was Matt's fault. That's why your string screwed up.
Trust me, broadheads get a lot of the blame one way or the other.
That's right. So, yep.
It's got to be the toughest category as far as dealing with the hunting public. You know, you either get all the glory or you get all the blame if someone doesn't get their critter.
Yeah.
You know, it usually comes down to the broadhead. My broadhead didn't work or whatever. So
yeah.
I've had that conversation about every day for 20 years as well.
Yep.
I'm like every broadhead manufacturer does, and I've heard it all.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've heard things that you guys, it just blow your mind.
just don't.
Yeah. It comes with the territory.
So. Exactly. And it's our biggest thing for broadheads is just don't leave them out in your case. You know, that's a big help to your strings. The longevity of how long your string is going to last. Just don't leave your broadheads rolling around in a case. And usually that's a good start.
seems like common sense, but you know,
like you said, you'd be surprised.
We get that.
We
get that all the time. We get bows that come in, you know, and you pop open the case and they've got their arrows in there with the broadheads on them. And they're like, well, I've got, you know, it's locked in there pretty good. I'm like, yeah, but would you want to risk that? You know what I mean? If it's not in a quiver with a hood on it or something. Yeah. I wanted to go back to and talk about, you had mentioned the technology and stuff, and I'm sure Matt, you can relate, but I remember, you know, the technology has really just gone crazy over the last decade. But man, I remember when I first got started hunting out west and getting a Garmin GPS, and you didn't even have, like, we didn't even have maps. All you had was a little arrow, and you had to track, you had to track where you were going. And the only purpose it really served was you could set waypoints, or you could, or to follow that track to get back out. And then came the downloading of the maps, and then came the, and now it's just like, everything is right there at your fingertips. It's just
on your phone.
It's
yeah.
wild, you know?
It's changed a bunch. Do you think about equipment? You know, when I was first starting to bow hunt, I mean, I don't know how many years it was that I shot and bow hunted without a range finder of any sort, mm-hmm. but it was a lot.
Yeah.
Just guessing yardage and old metal pins. You know, there was no such thing as a slider sight, and mm-hmm. and you just trying to guess yardage, and I can't tell you how many. And then I for years, even after releases came along, I still shot fingers instinctive on my bowstring.
Wow.
Up till not too long before I came here, till early 2000s, I was still shooting fingers. In fact, the first couple of critters I killed with a Grim Reaper, I was still pulling an old Matthews Conquest bow with fingers under the nock, you know, so yeah, things have come a long ways, and technology's come a long ways, but that's one thing I love about bow hunting. I mean, to some level, it's still always going to be primitive.
Absolutely.
And I know there's guy, like you talked about, a deer you shot at long range, and I've shot animals at those distances that I never could have or would have back then, mm-hmm. or, you know, guys get lucky, whatever, but now it's not unheard of to be proficient at those yardages or be successful at those yardages, especially when I'm hunting out west or chasing antelope or whatever. I think my average, I tallied up all the antelope I killed spot and stock one day, and my average shot's like 64 yards or something yeah. across all my spot and stock antelope, right? That's just the zone, 60, yeah. 70 yards. And back in the day, I wouldn't even thought about that shot. So yeah, it's helped, but it's never going to not be a primitive weapon in my mind. There's limitations. It's not like, you know, some precision, high power gun where you dial it in and could put a young kid on the scope and have him shoot something at 1,000 yards because they can, it's a customizable weapon that you have to learn to shoot and put in the time and energy, and you can still, you know, the more time and energy you put into being good at it ends up rewarding you, and there's always going to be limitations. So that's one of the things I just love about archery. It's just, no matter what the technology is, it's still going an arrow on a great big public land mule deer is an absolute just butt kicking challenge.
Yeah.
And always going to be. That's not ever going to change. So
yeah, I have yet to find a piece of technology that can replace practice and execution, right? I mean,
with bows.
With a bow. Yeah. It's yeah. just it, you know, I mean, I don't know what you know, maybe Joel Turner is like taking things into a different direction where now he's teaching people the mental game behind executing a shot. That might be the closest thing, but it doesn't really constitute technology.
The
in my
closest
mind.
Thing I could think is maybe like the Garmin sights. Those make people pretty lazy with the range finder. No offense to the people that use them, but you know, they have the range finding pin or dot, you know, that's mm-hmm. made it pretty easy where, you know, us guys, and I don't know if Utah, I'm assuming they don't allow them anyways, but you know, that we're still having to use a range finder, put it down, then, you know, hold a sight steady and go, where, you know, that's my idea of being the easiest to cheat, I guess, you know.
I would say the closest thing to technology that could assist in that area.
Yeah
right. But even then, to your point, you still manually have to execute. Yeah.
Still have to draw back, you know.
Yeah. And there's just so many little things to go wrong. You still have to pull the bow back manually, keep your nerves, manually execute a good shot, and if you haven't put in the time and energy to do so in the heat of the moment, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
Unless you get lucky, you know. I mean, so to me, it's just still a sport that the harder you work, the more successful you can be. And that's just what I think life should be about.
Yep.
You know, I'm not a fan of the gravy train at all. So,
yeah.
But that's one thing I just love about archery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, same here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So Matt, you know, we've known each other for a while, probably over a decade, easily over a decade now. And we've been friends on Facebook as well for a while. And, you know, I'd see a post from you here and there, but like the last few years I've noticed that you've been a lot more active on social media. I'm just curious, is there something in particular that kind of sparked the increase in your engagement, just more time or?
That's a really good question because for a long time, that was a pretty big mental battle for me. Fighting, not wanting to come across as somebody that was trying to say, hey, look at me or be vain or whatever. This is not my personality and it's not why I'm a bow hunter or a hunter. Mm-hmm. I love sharing my success and I love taking nice animals. I guess you could label me a trophy hunter. I utilize everything I shoot, but I'm hunting a lot of my hunts. I'm hunting for something special. Mm-hmm. And forever, I just didn't want to come across that I had any kind of an ego or whatever. As I got more and more into the industry and as I guess had more people that were being just super generous with me, giving me product or whatever, I kind of started to feel a bit of an obligation that, hey, I need to open myself up more. And I had a friend say, man, it's not coming across as arrogant or look at me, but you have so much knowledge to share. Mm-hmm. And so much experience. Like, you know, it's good for the sport. And so but it was a tug of war for me forever. Cause that's not my personality. And I've never wanted to be that guy that, hey, look at me, look how successful I am. So I fought it and fought it. I'd post something and I'd almost feel guilty about it. Right. I'm like, ah, does that come across like, hey, look at me, I'm a great hunter. And so, yeah, it's been but over the years I've gotten more comfortable with it. It's kind of comes along with the territory, being in the hunting industry, trying to promote products and brands and archery in general. I sort of realized that that's really important. Recruitment of, it started to get to me when I had my son in high school start saying, hey man, kids in my class know who you are or wonder what I'm gonna shoot this year and they think it's really cool. It started to get to me when I realized, look, maybe I can influence and help. And I've tried to, I bought a bunch of little youth Genesis bows and I've done countless shoots with youth and stuff just on the side because it started becoming, I need to put myself out there more to try and help grow this sport that I love so much and share that passion. And if I can look at it that way rather than feeling like I'm trying to tout myself as something, it's kind of made me feel a little bit more comfortable sharing and opening up and sharing my success a little more. So it's just been a kind of a tug of war over the years and I've slowly got, you know, I guess my vision's changed a little bit. Hopefully it comes across me not being that way to anybody because that's not what my intentions are. I just love archery. I love bow hunting. I enjoy sharing my success and my knowledge. And I do a lot of that behind the scenes with people. I have people reach out to me daily in my community or whatever. Just I meet with people all the time to help them come over to my house and shoot. And that's what I want it to be. I just want to spread my passion and knowledge for bow hunting and archery. And that's important because our recruitment for new bow hunters is not great. You know, as a lot of these baby boomers are getting too old and crossbows have opened the door for some of them to stay in the game longer. But I don't think the recruitment of new bow hunters is necessarily matching what we're losing. And we, you know, I make my living doing this and it's my, aside from God and my family, it's my biggest passion. And I, you know, I'm trying to open myself up to share it a little bit more. That's all.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I love that. And I feel that, you know, too, because, you know, I have a little bit of imposter syndrome as well. And so in a lot of cases, I just maybe don't feel like I'm worthy or I get the maybe feeling like you're gloating or something like that. But just, and for the record too, I just want to let you know that I love it. It's great to have seen, all of a sudden I just started seeing you post stuff and I was like, and I kind of was thinking, I was like, gosh, you know, maybe it just wasn't in my algorithm to see what was going on in your world or something like that. But, you know, I, and not to be creepy, but I went back, you know, and I was like, yeah, he didn't post as much as he does now. And so, and I love that. I think it's amazing that you're putting yourself out there, and to the friend that told you that you should, you know, you have a lot of knowledge and thank you for putting all that stuff out there. It's just, it's really fun to see and watch. And even just I didn't know you had such a huge passion for walleye fishing, and to see all of the stuff you're doing there and just the time, you know, spending with your family, you know, fishing and doing all that kind of stuff is fantastic. So thanks for putting that out there for all of us to see.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. So like I said, it's been a tug of war mentally for me to put myself out there at times, but hopefully I'll just keep being comfortable with it and share my adventures and you know, jumping back. I have a kind of a bow hunting mentor, Mike Lowry is his name, out of Montana. He's my dad's age. He's like a second dad to me. And as a kid, we didn't have Instagram back then or smartphones, anything. But as a kid, he's the one that introduced my dad to bow hunting, and he voice bugled for elk, and he was always killing these animals with his bow. And I absolutely looked at him like, man, I want to do that. And that's as a kid, because my dad just wasn't into archery really. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, I had someone that I could look at and just see those cool stories and see those pictures. And I remember his picture on the front of Bugle magazine with an elk. And every time he'd come over to a family gathering or whatever, I was just like starstruck, kind of like wanting to. And long story short, me and him have become, he was my elk hunting mentor. We've become super close over the years and been on a lot of great hunts together. And he's 76 now. And that's a whole different story. But that's another side of it. I thought even if one person out there looks at me and my success and it motivates them to go that direction and trying to improve themselves or get into the archery game, then what, you know, I can justify in my own mind, just putting myself out there and sharing stories and success. Cause in the end, that's what it's all about. So,
yeah, I think it's kind of funny. Cause I feel like us actual industry guys like that we are working behind the scenes for these companies. I feel like I see that a lot more with us. Like we all feel like we don't want to be in the limelight. You know, that's why we have our marketing people and we, you know, certain companies pay for the guys to go and catch all those followers and whatnot. But I feel the same way. I'm just like, man, I don't want to like show off, even though I don't hardly kill anything, but I feel the same way. I'm like, I don't want to feel like I got the limelight there, but like when I see you post stuff, I feel the exact same thoughts that Rick said. I see it as more like, hey, it's another industry guy. I'm like, that's so sweet. It's almost like just seeing a friend being successful. Not saying we've known each other a lot at all. It's just another just background guys, what I've started to call us. It's just like, you know, the camera's not really on us a lot, but you know, and I'm okay with that. Totally okay mm-hmm. with that. It's just, mm-hmm. It's fun seeing, you know, the guys that, you know, this is our 9-to-5, so to speak. You know, this is what we live for. This is our job. This is our livelihood. It's awesome seeing, you know, the success shared with us, not just the guys that are, you know, literally having their livelihood is the likes and the follows and everything. You know, I think there's a lot more of us. You know, Ears was the same way. You know, he did not want the, I remember his post when Instagram first was, you know, all the hashtags. I think his one deer picture is just a deer, I think is all he put.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still think of that to this day. I'm just like, you know, that's how I see us on the back end of things, where there's a lot of other people out there that are just like, they are the, you know, look at me, but that might be their livelihood. So I don't see it as a bad thing. It's just, I totally feel the same exact way. I'm just like, you know, trying to play it low key, but also, you know, here's my success, you know, here's what I like to do. That, you know, it's awesome.
Yeah. That was the nice thing about having ears around too. Cause as much as he didn't want to be, he was kind of the face of Vapor Trail,
you know,
being on all the sales calls and traveling and doing all that. And then I would, you know, do some blog posts and really kind of pump him up and stuff, you know, and he's just like, he would just shake his head. He's like, man, I don't want to be that guy, you know, but I was always just like, you know, I'm like, dude, but you're the man, right? Like, so we gotta, you know, show it. And then now that he's gone, now I've replaced that where I don't really want to be out there, but what choice do we really have? You know,
right.
I mean, we don't have the opportunities to, you know, really pay talent to do stuff for us or pay photographers to do stuff for us. So here, me and you, we find ourselves in a lot of our content, and even, you know, with our marketing coordinator, Gracie, you know, she's got all the assets that she can access, and then she'll put them in place and I'll review them. And anytime there's one of me, I'm like, is there any way you can like just cut my face out of that? You know, just, you know, cause it just, it almost seems like it's too much. Like, I don't want people to think like I'm trying to put myself out there that way. You know, I don't want it to be that way, but it just kind of is.
Yeah. You know? So I think we try to remain humble, but in our humbleness, it's really just, you know, it's just okay. You know, we don't have to feel that way.
And I'm learning, and I've had a lot of people. In the end, you know, there really is nobody in the world that has more experience with Grim Reaper than me. Mm-hmm. Maybe not even the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Just the ins and outs and day to day of every product we've ever made for the last two decades. And, you know, I'm one of the only people that can share some of the knowledge about some of those things. And so I've had a lot of people, man, you got to do more videos or this or that. I fight that same thing. I don't want to be on camera, really. I don't want to, but there's also a lot of great knowledge that we can share that we take for granted that we know.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of the things are just natural to me now, and they're just everyday life. And even in bow hunting, so many things that seem very simple and basic to me as a bow hunter that make me successful, I've realized as I've got more hands-on with youth and even novice bow hunters or guys I looked at and said, oh, he's been bow hunting for 10 years. I realized that some of the little things I do are not just common knowledge to people. Mm-hmm. And even though they feel that way to me, they feel so natural and simple to me. And so there's all those little snippets of things that really, really can help guys.
Yeah.
And I've had guys just be like, dude, man, that changed my life. Like you. And so those little moments of heartwarming moments of my information or my help helping somebody have kind of kept pushing me to share things that right now I think are just common knowledge, but they're not.
Right.
They're important to share, and they're good information to share, and can help others out there. So
yeah, excellent. It is funny. Like, you know, I just got another, what is it, weekly email from Archery Talk, if you're subscribed. And it is funny going into those threads, and just like you're saying, it's something that us three probably are like, oh yeah, whatever. And I'm seeing some guy go, oh, just do this. I'm like, wow, like that would be my like first thought or process. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, we're just what do you always call me, a sleuth or something?
Yeah, like, you're out there, you're doing the, you're digging.
Yeah, digging, the digging
and finding
like
the stuff. Yeah.
Staying low key, you know, undercover. And, you know, a lot of people don't actually know this stuff, you know. And again, going back to the technology, there's YouTube now. I mean, there's hunting shows that give you hunting spots. So, I mean, there's a lot of information out there, and it's changed a lot. But, you know, you with specifically, you know, broadheads, again, you probably know things that you could teach me a ton. And we know about, you know, like you said, a bunch, you know, strings. You know bow strings on the outside, but until you work here, there's just so much to it that you'd never think you'd know.
Yeah. And we have to like constantly remind ourselves of that, you know, cause we'll get phone calls from dealers and stuff. And sometimes your brain immediately starts to go, well, gee, how can you be a dealer and not know this?
Yeah.
But then again, in retrospect, thinking about back before I started working for Vapor Trail and when I was working in a pro shop and I thought I knew stuff about bowstrings, and then I started working here and I was like, oh man, I don't know. I didn't know anything, you know? Yeah. So we have to constantly tell ourselves that, like you said, you know, you have the knowledge, but you have to remind yourself that not everybody has that knowledge, and it's our job to teach them and not get frustrated with that, but, you know, lead the way.
Yeah, exactly. And not feel like we're taking the limelight by posting on social media, you know, exactly. We're just helping the next guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. So,
yeah, well, folks, that brings us to the end of this episode. Matt, thanks so much for your time today. And especially, like, I also want to say thanks for, you know, being a steward for the community, the archery community, putting yourself out there. And it's always been a pleasure to work with you. I know Hollywood's had the opportunity to work with you since we opened the pro shop.
Yep.
You've always been just very responsive, super kind. You know, we always get the chance to see you at the ATA show every year, and that's always a pleasure. So thank you so much for all of that.
Yeah, you bet, guys. It's been fun to chat and get to know you guys over the years. So appreciate everything you guys do as well.
Yeah, I'm just going to do it too. I'm going to say thanks again. I know you're a busy man, and 1 hour is pretty tough to grab from you. But where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you? And that can be socials or your business card.
Yeah, so, you know, Grimraker Broadheads, if you want to check out our products, it's just www.grimrakerbroadheads.com. Social media, just Facebook, Instagram, et cetera. Just look up Grimraker Broadheads as well. And if you want to follow along any of my personal adventures, it's just on Instagram. It's just matt.s.bateman is my handle there. And I try and share just some fun adventures out in the mountains and on the lakes and some of my success and tidbits of info. So, those are kind of the ways you can look me up and see what I got going.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Well, folks, you can find us at The Range Podcast on Instagram and on Facebook. Also, be sure to head over to the Vapor Trail and Stoker Eyes social channels and give us a follow there. Don't forget about the video version of this episode on the Vapor Trail YouTube channel. Be sure to hit that thumbs up button, subscribe, and hit that bell so you can be up to date on all things archery. And also, if you're listening, do us a favor, make sure you give us a rating and make sure you give us 5 stars.
And with that, we're going to pack up our bows. Hit the range. Have a great day, guys.
Thanks, everybody. See ya.
Vapor Trail is now offering an exclusive discount to the Range Podcast listeners. Enter promo code TRP15, that's TRP15, at checkout for 15% off VTX bowstrings and Vapor Trail and Stoker Eyes branded t-shirts, hats, and other gear.
This episode is brought to you by Redfin. You're listening to a podcast, which means you're probably multitasking, maybe even scrolling home listings on Redfin, saving homes without expecting to get them. But Redfin isn't just built for endless browsing. It's built to help you find and own a home with agents who close twice as many deals. When you find the one, you've got a real shot at getting it. Get started at redfin.com. Own the dream.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.